Go for Growth Show, powered by Beepo.
Welcome to this episode of the Go for Growth Show. My name's Mark Engelman, and I'll be your host today. I'm really happy on today's episode to have Mark Bowater, the owner of Top Lock Locksmiths, a Brisbane-based locksmith company, on the show. So welcome, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Let's get straight into it. So along with Top Lock Locksmiths, you're also the president of the Brisbane Chapter for Entrepreneurs organization. Can you explain to the audience what EO is and what does your role in EO entail?
Sure. EO is an organization for owners or founders of businesses with revenues greater than US $1 million a year. Global organization with, I think, something like about 13,000 members now, about 550, 600 or something, and across Australia and New Zealand. So in the Brisbane chapter, which I'm president of, we have about 120 entrepreneurs as members. And we have about 20 in what's called the Accelerator Program. So that's a program for businesses between 150,000 and a million turnover. And it's about helping them to scale up and grow and ultimately sort of get over the million. My role is the president of the Brisbane chapter. I have a board of about 10 or so, and we are all about running the chapter to effectively sort of suit the members in terms of what members are looking for. There are a number of products that EO has, learning events, forums, global and regional sort of learning events and so on. We're really about sort of assisting with those, and then also doing whatever we can do for our members to help them in business.
Yeah, great. So, you know, it's a pretty common story that you hear sometimes about business owners who might just be sort of starting out and early on in their sort of entrepreneurial life. And, you know, often their network at that time consists mainly of people that are employed in jobs, not typically owning their own businesses or maybe even not that interested or knowledgeable about running a business and business strategy and that sort of stuff. So how does EO address that for entrepreneurs?
To some extent, I think that's the biggest benefit. That's the real gain in EO. When I joined EO 7 years ago, I actually was living in Mackay in central Queensland at the time. I had been in business for about 10 years by myself. None of my family effectively were in business. None of my friends were sort of in business. And I didn't really have anyone to talk to. Whatever I did was fluke, good luck, whatever. I heard of Entrepreneurs Organization and it was like, what's this? I'd never even heard of them. And I went and checked out the website, and as soon as I read it, I went, that is what I've been looking for. Just follow people to sort of bounce ideas off and so on. And so a large part of EO is that whole people who have been through the same experiences as you before. I guess one of the cornerstones of EO is that we don't give each other advice because everyone's willing to get advice. I get advice from people all the time, but they're not people who have necessarily been through it and have their house on the line and those sorts of things. So EO is about experience sharing. And you'll be amazed, you know, when you're in business and you have employee issues, you know, cash flow issues, all those sorts of things. Everyone else has been through the same issues. And so the depth of experience sharing that you can get from other members of EO who have been through those issues before is just extremely useful. And so that really is a large part of one of the benefits of EO. There's a lot of people in EO call it their tribe, basically. I found my tribe, a bunch of people who sort of think like me, can't sleep at night, they wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat about something or whatever. I mean, we're all the same. We all sort of do that, and we can relate to it, you know, when someone else is talking about something. I certainly think of it as my tribe, that's for sure.
Yeah, cool. And so you've already shared a couple of examples of how EO's helped you. Have you got any other examples to share about how being a member of EO's really helped you with your business?
Total change of life, I suppose. Changed my life massively. Like I say, I've been in business for about 10 years. I probably didn't really understand the value of personal growth and personal learning beforehand. Yeah, I mean, I like reading books, but I wasn't really into business books and those sorts of things. EO has 5 core values. One of the core values is thirst for learning. I have started reading business books and just the learnings out of those business books, the learnings from going along to EO learning events. You know, the Brisbane chapter probably has 15 to 20 sort of learning events a year, which range between business speakers, personal growth speakers, family events, Christmas parties, sort of those sorts of things. But just the range of speakers that I've seen, and I guess my general knowledge, I suppose I would describe it, about business is just grown massively. And in terms of sort of, you know, life-changing, I mean, I had a mining engineering business when I joined EO. A consulting business, had about sort of 25 consultants or so, and I was actually at an EO global learning event in New Zealand. We were playing a game of golf, myself and one of my EO mates who was at the same university. As we were walking around playing the game of golf, we were talking about what the perfect business looked like, and we started listing a whole pile of criteria. The first one was no employees, because you just deal with sometimes. And the second one was no difficult customer relationships that you had to maintain, because that's hard work as well. And then other things like, you know, earns revenue 168 hours a week instead of just 40. And so we came up with about 15 sort of criteria for the perfect business. And when I looked at my current consulting business, it ticked about 2 of those boxes, and that was about it. And until I joined EO, you know, I had always sort of thought to myself, you know, should I do something different? Should I change business or something? And I'd always sort of thought to myself, why stop doing something that I know and that I have 25 years experience in or whatever to go and do something that I don't know? You know, I mean, that just sounds illogical. But it was that day playing that game of golf that the seed was planted that in the scheme of businesses, you know, a professional services business is hard work. And there's a lot of boxes that potentially doesn't tick. So that day was the day that I began the journey of selling my consulting business, that had I not joined EO, I never would have been crossed my mind. I would continue to say to myself, just keep doing what you're good at. That's it.
Yeah. And like you said, that it's not really scalable, is it? And it's often those sorts of professional services businesses often sort of are a result of the founder or the owner.
Correct.
And it's often hard to take a backwards or a sideways step out of that business, isn't it?
Very hard for you to not be the central cog that everything rotates around. That's one of the things that I found most difficult as the founder of the business and the person that long-term customers were used to dealing with and so on. They don't want to deal with anyone else. They want to deal with you. And even just peace of mind, you know, overseas on a holiday or something like that, and there's something happening, some client's supposed to get some report or schedule by a date and it hasn't happened and so on. I mean, I was halfway up Mount Fuji, climbing that Fuji stain in sort of one of the mountain lodges, sitting there with my laptop doing a schedule sort of at 10 o'clock at night while everyone else was sleeping, because we're getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to get up there for sunrise and so on. You know, it's things like that. I'm thinking to myself, what am I thinking? Why am I doing this? You know? So, from a professional services point of view, it's hard to get out.
Yeah, and I guess in some respects that's also the difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur, in that an entrepreneur is someone who's, you know, interested in business and interested in growing and scaling businesses, but not necessarily working within the business, I guess.
Correct. One of the first things that I learned to know was ultimately, as the entrepreneur, the aim is to make yourself redundant. The business runs without you. I like the whole concept of choosing whether I go to work today or not, or choosing what tasks I'm doing. So yes, that concept, making yourself redundant, is one I can rejoice.
Yes. My dad always used to tell me about Tuesday. You can choose whichever day you like to go to work. Every day is Tuesday.
Yep. Like that concept. I'll remember that one.
Nice. So I'm also connected with you on Facebook, Mark, and I love how you use it as a platform to kind of engage with, you know, your network and kind of conduct, you know, market research on various different tactics that you've sort of been thinking about and looking to use at TopLock. Have you always been that consultative in as a sort of a business owner, or has EO developed that in you, do you think?
I certainly don't think I've always been that consultative. I certainly have never thought that I've had the solution for everything and that I know everything. You can learn from everyone. And so I never try and do that. I guess I have always seen Facebook as a tool with some use to some extent. So in my mining consulting business, supply and demand meant there was plenty of work out there, but it was very hard to find engineers. There was an extreme shortage of engineers. So I actually used Facebook as probably one of my primary recruiting tools for a number of years, where I personally, with my personal profile, would just make friends with mining engineers around Australia anyway, and effectively cultivate them to some extent via Facebook. And you know, it's amazing. You know, you would just see posts on their wall about something they weren't happy at work, or bad at work, or something like that, and you get these insights. And so then I would just say, hey, you want to change a job or whatever, sort of, and so on. So it was my recruitment tool rather than Seek, for example, for a long time. With TopLock, with my locksmith business, different dynamics. Employees are not so hard to find. It's not so much a recruitment tool, but with 400 friends or whatever it is, I'm certainly a good market research tool. And so I just tend to use it for different means. you can get information from Google Analytics and all those other sorts of things, but sometimes that doesn't really give you the personal insight that you need. It's just numbers and so on. So I like to sort of see some of the comments or some of the reasons or the feedback that I get from a post, because it's one of those fascinating things that when you get inside an industry, and I mean, I'm not even a locksmith, but you know, having now been involved in a locksmith for 4 years, locksmith business for 4 years, I now know so much more than I did before. And so I don't necessarily think like Joe Blog down the road about my house or my business or something anymore, because I know the sort of the security solutions I should be thinking about. So it helps me to get back to sort of basics to some extent, read some of the feedback that I get from some of my questions. But in terms of the consultative side, I think EO has definitely helped. Definitely helped with that. I will consult fellow EOers with questions just all the time now. You know, there's a chapter of 120, and I pretty much know the 120 of them personally, so I can jump on the phone and ask any of them a question at any point in time. Just last week I sort of had a business issue, a potentially significant business issue. I probably spoke to six or seven EOs on the day, gave them a call. They didn't necessarily have had that experience before. It was something that was relatively unique. But I could still get some thoughts from them on what they would do sort of in that scenario and so on now. And I think back to when I first joined EO, and I probably really hadn't got the hang of it to some extent. I made decisions and did things that cost me a heck of a lot of money that I look back now and I think to myself, geez, I had like a whole pile of EO mates. Why didn't I ask someone? Why didn't I get a second opinion or something? You know, I just look back now and think about how stupid I was to some extent. And so I endeavour to try not to make the same mistakes again if someone else in EO has already made that same mistake.
Yes. No, that makes complete sense. You're telling me the other day that you've recently partnered with another EOer. And that you've sort of merged your businesses together, which gives you the opportunity to play to your strengths and your own interests. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, a bit of lateral thinking, I suppose, to some extent. I'm always one for sort of looking at opportunities from a different perspective and so on. So I'm an engineer. I love numbers. Put me in front of spreadsheets, I can just do those sorts of things all day. So I have a sort of fairly good operations, finance, processes background, which is, I hate sales and marketing. It's just not me. I'm not a salesman, you know. I'd rather go to the dentist than make cold calls to some extent. I've made some fairly good friends in EO, and there's another EO who I've been friends with for about 5 years or so. And she owns a marketing business, and she loves sales and marketing. She hates numbers and hates processes and so on. And so we sat down and started having some discussions about, well, you know, I have strengths in one area, she has strengths in a different area, and they're complementary. And maybe we could do something a bit smarter with that. So we started the process where we would actually spend a couple of hours a week in each other's business. So I would come in and sort of, you know, set up a cash flow for her, or sort of do some break-even type numbers or those sorts of things. And she would come in and help with sort of sales and marketing. And that was going really well, actually. And so we sat down and said, well, that's probably really just the beginning of the journey, isn't it? Well, what if we just ramp it up from here? And so we sort of discussed the concept of, all right, let's effectively throw all our businesses in a pool, work out some ownership arrangement sort of, and so on. And then Belinda now looks after sales and marketing across all of the businesses, and I look after operations and finance across all the businesses. So we now have sort of four businesses in a pool that we are 50-50 owners of, and I don't have to do sales and marketing stuff anymore, and I love it. And I just work in my flow, which is sort of numbers and analysis and process and operations from a point of view of managing people. You know, I enjoy dealing with people, so that suits me fine. She loves it because she doesn't have to do numbers anymore and administration and bookkeeping and all that sort of stuff. And she's just in charge of sales and marketing sort of across the four businesses. So something a bit different that, you know, without something like EO, for example, the concept would never have even entered my mind. Belinda is a marketing, she's a creative, she's very different to me. I think it works pretty well. You know, we definitely have a fairly good aligned set of values. That's something that's critical for the relationship to work, is to have the same values. And we sort of have the same, I wouldn't say we have identical long-term goals, but, you know, aligned long-term goals and aligned values. It just makes it easy. To some extent, you know, I'd had partners in business previously before I joined EO, and I can look back now and understand sort of why it didn't work and so on that I didn't necessarily understand at the time. You know, and some of it is around, it's not just around skill sets, but it's around values and long-term goals and sort of those sorts of things that I didn't have the wisdom at the time years ago to have those sorts of discussions. And clarification. From my point of view, we're about 6 months in. You know, we have about four businesses now. The long-term aim is just to continue to scale those and add more opportunities as we see, and between us have the skill set to tackle anything.
Yeah, fantastic. That sounds really exciting, and I'd like to, sort of stay close to see how that all works out, because I've never heard of anyone sort of doing that before, so it's quite new to me.
Yes, I know some other EOs who have gone into business together, you know, founded something new sort of, and so on. I've seen a number of examples of that, but not necessarily take their existing businesses not merge them, but effectively, put them in a pool under a whole sense of entity and so on, and go, all right, let's just change the dynamics of what we do. I will be interested to see how it goes.
And it's interesting when you talk about, you know, business partnership, and you were saying that it's not just about, you know, what skills are people bringing to the table, but it's also about, you know, aligned values, and I guess having that underlying level of trust. And you probably don't have that level of trust without being in an organization like EO, because you've already spent years building a relationship with Belinda and building that level of trust and understanding each other's values.
Correct.
You don't really get that opportunity outside of those sorts of organizations, do you?
Yeah, no, because certainly EO is about not discussing the 95% of life that you can discuss with anyone, anywhere, anytime. We talk about the 5%, discussing the 5% that you don't necessarily discuss with anyone else. And they're very much the highs and lows sort of a business, you know. And that requires a high level of confidentiality and trust to have those discussions. So, by default, when you've been in EO with someone for a few years, there's just an extremely high level of trust, from my point of view, the values alignment I don't have any lack of confidence in anything associated, Belinda and us sort of agreeing on paths forwards and decisions, the sort of decisions that you have to make in business and the tough decisions sometimes and so on. I just have a very high degree of confidence because of the background that it will all be fine.
Yeah, cool. All right, so let's rewind a little bit. One thing that always fascinates me about talking to business owners is where they came from. And how they made, why did they make the decision to leave employment and start a business? And, because I know that a lot of the listeners on this show probably aren't business owners and they probably are, working in jobs that they may or may not be happy in and often toy with the idea of going out on their own and starting a business doing something. So it's always good to hear the stories that business owners have about when they made that change in their life and what sort of triggered it and what happened.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
I actually just studied civil engineering at college and started working the main road straight out of university. Had thought about doing mining engineering when I was in school, but I didn't really know much about it and I just sort of left it. But I heard about the mining industry and effectively how high the wages were, and I thought I actually didn't mind the whole concept of living out in the bush somewhere. I actually wanted to experience that coming from Brisbane anyway. So I thought, geez, why don't I go and work out in the bush somewhere and earn double the wages that I'm on now? And so I did. I sort of got a job in the mining industry. Spent, I think, probably about 10 or 12 years or so in various roles in mines in Queensland and Western Australia. Working for sort of companies such as Rio Tinto and Thiess and so on, and was busy climbing the corporate ladder to some extent, this is in terms of mining world rather than sort of a head office in the city. In the back of my head, I always sort of envisaged that one day I might go into business, but it was never a priority. It was just a one day. I was busy. I enjoyed the challenges and the work of working at the mine sites. I was working at a mine site and I was staying in a camp and it was about an hour and a half from home and I had sort of young kids, they were sort of 1 and 3 and so on, and I was away sort of 3 or 4 nights a week, coming home sometimes midweek and so on, and I got to the point where I just went, this is not, the family life doesn't match the sort of the work life. And this is when I was living in Mackay at the time and working in a mine a couple of hours inland. And so I thought to myself, I need to make a change. So I'm actually just going to get a job, a mining engineering job in Mackay. And I assumed that there would be a consulting company there or something that I could just get a job with and so be home every night. Mm. And my assumption that there would be a consulting company there was because the Bowen Basin land from Mackay and Rockhampton is just a core part of the mining industry in Queensland. So I thought there will be a consultant just on its on its doorstep. I grabbed the yellow pages at the time, had a look, there was none. I just went, well, that doesn't work, because that was my plan. I was just going to get a job with a consultant in Mackay and I don't want to move to Brisbane. And I went, shit, maybe I'll just start my own. And so it was more just that I wanted to make a personal change. There was no significant business drive at the time. Mm. In fact, I had always, working in the mine sites, I'd always had a very lowly opinion of consultants. So there was no drive for me to go and start my own consulting company. But the day I started, the day I sort of turned up and did my first job, I just loved it from the very beginning. The variety of work, you know, I would turn up at a mine site and have to go along to a meeting or something, and they would say, "Oh, Mark, you can take the minutes." And back at my previous job, I would think, "Oh shit, I don't want to take minutes. Who wants to do that?" Yeah. You know, but I would turn up and I would think to myself, "Well, if you want to pay me X dollars an hour to take the minutes, fine, I will take the minutes." You know, so and no task was boring. Every mine site was different. There was just so much to learn versus being at the one mine site sort of 5 years and finding some tasks mundane and repetitive. But no task was mundane when you were changing mine site. So I loved it from the very beginning. And I think I knew, I think I always knew when I started that I was going to scale the business. I think there was just something inside me that was a drive. And it sort of didn't take me too long to realize that being a one-man band consultant in the mining industry meant that I was still doing a lot of travel, a lot of work out at mine sites. So I hadn't really changed the dynamics at home being away a lot. So fairly quickly, it sort of became a decision of, well, if I stay as a one-man band forever, I'm going to be traveling forever. And a way for me to stop that is for me to have engineers working for me doing the travel. I think after about a year, I put on my first employee and I knew that wasn't going to be enough. I could see that I would probably need about at least five or something like that before I was spending most of my time at home. So the scaling, initially the driver was sort of was the personal side more so than anything else. And I think over time, I came to develop a real drive to some extent, you know, and I have a definition these days, so my own personal definition between sort of business owner and entrepreneur, and that is that for me, an entrepreneur sort of eats, lives and breathes their business. They think about it all the time. They wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it and got to jot down some notes or whatever. Whereas I think a lot of business owners have effectively bought themselves a job to some extent. You know, it's still 8 to 5 and they go home and they switch off and so on. Well, I never switch off. And in fact, you know, even from a, it's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about business is that it's given me the flexibility. I would probably still do the same number of hours in a week that a lot of people do from a work point of view. But it doesn't have to be 8 to 5. Kids have got something on at school or whatever. I'll just start early that morning and I'll finish at 2 and head to the school, you know, or I'll just sit down at the computer at night time and work. So, you know, I just work whenever I want. I still get the same amount of work done. So I love that. That's one of the things that I love from the point of view of running my own business is that I still get the work done. I enjoy it. I just love doing it. I just get to do it when I want to do it rather than someone else telling me, you know. So it didn't sort of take me too long to just start to get this entrepreneurial consumption. I was somewhat consumed by my business and I enjoyed thinking about it. And once I'd started the scaling, it was a bit of a case of, well, you know, why stop to some extent? So I did. I just kept scaling. I opened up a business office in addition to the Mackay office. Got up to about 35 employees in total sort of before I sold the business. Yeah. And having decided to sell the business and do something else, it was then a case of what? And it's interesting because, you know, throughout my life I've always heard people talk about the journey and so on, and being an engineer and a numbers man, I've always thought the journey was a load of crap to some extent. It was just about the end results. I was only ever interested in the outcomes or the end results. And the first time that I actually sort of even started to notice and become interested in the journey was when I sold my mining business. And I thought, what am I going to do now? And my first question was, you know, do I leave the mining industry or do I stay in the mining industry? And my second question was, do I start something new again or do I buy something? Because the concept of going to work for someone was not even an option that I sort of even thought about. So I spent about a year or so on those two major decisions. In the end, I sort of decided variety was the spice of life. I'd spent 25 years or so in the mining industry. Margaret, that's going to be something different. So I decided I would get out of the industry. And And I thought to myself, my logic at the time was, oh, I'm too old to do another startup. I need to buy something. So I decided I was just going to buy a business. And like all naive business owners, I just thought I'll buy a cash cow and the money will roll in and it'll all be good. So that was the dream anyway. So once I decided to buy a business, I then approached it from a fairly open-minded point of view. I didn't have anything in mind. What I did was I just had things that were not on the list. So I knew I didn't want anything to do with food because of hygiene standards and all those sorts of things. I knew I didn't want anything to do with alcohol because of just licensing and regulations and everything. But I didn't want anything to do with sort of management rights or any of those sorts of things. I didn't want to buy a news agent 7 days a week by 13 hours a day or sort of something like that. So all I had was a list of businesses that did not even make the list. Then I just started looking and I actually just started trawling sort of websites, brokers' websites, and every business was an option. And I probably considered sort of 50 or so, something like that. Not in detail, just reading the information memorandum, those sorts of things. Hmm. And in the end, finished up settling on a locksmith business that was about 1.5 kilometers from home, which wasn't a key driver as to why I bought it, but it was just a bonus. I was sort of traveling into the city. So this concept of working 1.5 kilometers away and nowhere near a main road was just fantastic. And it was funny because when I was considering buying the business, I said to my wife, "Think about buying this top lock. You know, we should mystery shop them." And she said, "I already have. I use them. When we first moved into the home 1.5 years ago, I got them in to do the work." I went, "Oh, were they any good?" She said, "Oh, fantastic." I went, "Oh, great." And then it was only a week or two later, for some reason or another, I was looking at my keys for my my old office in town with my mining business. And sure enough, there was top lock written on the side of the keys. So they had actually been our locksmith as well. So they were our locksmith in both business and private. And it was funny because I just thought, oh, this is meant to be. Not that I'm into meant to be. But I decided, the more I looked into the locksmith business, the more I liked about it. Some of the aspects around sort of recurring revenue and those sorts of things. And admittedly, it didn't tick all 15 of my ideal business criteria. I think it probably ticked about 8 to 10 or something like that. But it was certainly a leap from my
two boxes.
Business. So I bought that business and then just went on a very steep learning curve about locks and the processes inside a locksmith business and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, great. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the interview. This is the second last question. What's your number one tip for business owners and entrepreneurs looking to grow and scale?
I think it took me a while to sort of to really learn this to some extent. But my number one tip is to get out of your own way to some extent. I remember, one of my hardest days in business was when I put on my first employee, my first consultant, because I was worried every time he went to a mine site. I thought to myself, this guy is carrying my reputation. He could go out there and he could be an idiot and he could undo all of my hard work. And then the second one was difficult, but it was a little bit easier. And it got easier as I put each sort of person on. Ultimately, I think for me, the real learning was that, I've always sort of been one of, if you want a job done right, do it yourself, because, exactly what you want versus, trying to get someone else to do it. I guess what I've realized over time is that, if I want it done right, I've got to do it myself, will get in the way, because you need to put on an employee to do that job for you. And they might only do it 80% as well as you might do it. However, that 80% is good enough because it frees you up to think about where can I be putting my time that is a better return on investment. Time and a return on investment of time is something that I think about all the time from the point of view of, I've got X hours a week that I'm going to put into work. Where can I put that best gives me the best return overall? Stuck in that mindset of, I need this done right or whatever, I'll do it. it for me just holds you back from the point of view of putting someone else on it and you putting your time into something else. And that's a difficult thing for a lot of business owners is to relinquish that level of control to some extent and trust someone else to do that job that you've always done and that you feel is critical in the scheme of things. So my number one tip is get out of your own way and be ready to relinquish control.
Yes, very important. Last question, have you used any new technology apps or services recently that have really assisted you in saving time or growing and scaling?
It's interesting. I love technology. I wouldn't say I'm an early adopter and I love apps and so on, but there are so many of them around these days. It's almost like there's too many. It's almost like there are too many platforms. You know, if you take communication from a point of view, you know, we use Skype internally within the company for a long time, and it just, you know, to reduce emails and that sort of stuff. And we've recently changed from Skype to Google sort of Hangout, and that was my IT guy sort of said, we should do this because this is better and so on. But there's WhatsApp and there's Slack, and there are just so many platforms, so many choices, and people are wanting to change all the time. You know, my guys are sort of going, we should switch from this to this. And I just sort of push back on a lot of that stuff. I like using the technology, but, you know, let's try and sort of maintain some consistency to some extent. But I think the one technology thing that we have done 2.5 years ago in TopLock was an enterprise management system, so software for running the whole business effectively. And we put in Simpro. There was software there when I bought the business, but it was very outdated and really only had half of the information that you needed, sort of, and so on. So we went down the track of evaluation of a lot of options, because there are so many options, and decided on Simpro. And the thing about the enterprise management systems is that, you know, if you're going to do it, they are a lot of work to get it right. They are labor intensive from the point of view of what you have to input and check and everything to make sure that it's right. Because if you don't, it does become a bullshit in, bullshit out exercise. And so undoubtedly it's increased the labor requirement of having a system that's right. But excuse me, that, you know, the payoffs in terms of more professionalism, more consistent service, et cetera, that we can provide our customers and so on because of the things that we know, you know. So a customer can ring about a job or something, and my service guy on the phone can instantly call up the job, see the history and all those sorts of things. So just the level of professionalism that you can provide versus looking like you know nothing about nothing. Is a massive payoff. You know, for me, being a numbers man, a lot of my business decisions are made around numbers. So, you know, I will sit down and do some analysis on the numbers of different parts that we sell or the stock that we carry and how many days does it take to turn over or things like that. And so for me, that sort of information is absolutely essential from a business point of view. You know, I hate trying to run a business without having the information at my fingertips to make decisions. And sometimes they're fairly major decisions, you know. A gut feel is good, but subjectivity is a dangerous thing sometimes, because you can ask your guys and they will always remember the one time that something sort of didn't work or whatever. And so that becomes their answer. It's, that doesn't work or whatever. You know, they forget the 20 times that it did sort of work and so on. So I much prefer objective data. So something like, an enterprise management system for us has been critical in the scheme of things. So that's the one bit of technology that we have done. I'd sort of love to put others and so on in, but it's a case of the time. Someone has the time to evaluate them and decide on whether it really is worth it or not.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, thanks for your time, Mark. That's was my last question. Thanks for your time, and we'll catch up soon.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
The Go for Growth Show, powered by Beepo.